The Florida Community of Mindfulness is happy to make these talks available to you. If you find this talk to be a benefit, please consider making a donation to support us. You'll find a donation button on the Talks section of our website, floridamindfulness.org. Thank you, and may you be happy and free of suffering.
So the subject matter for today's talk is on this very traditional text on what's called the mind trainings. And in our community, we have these various paths of practice that go on all the time, and there's a group of people who are members who are working through these teachings and practices. And some of them are here. How many people here are in that intensive? So a bunch of them. And then there are also people on, this is being live streamed and recorded, so how many people are on?
17.
So 17 people who aren't in the Tampa Bay area who are part of this intensive are also participating. Maybe I should have said that in the beginning. So there are 17 other people who are, they're not just listening in for the talk, they're involved in the whole day, wherever they are, okay? So let me, I want to focus, because this is a day long, but also because it has a special emphasis on these teachings and practices that we've been doing in this intensive on the mind trainings. I want to focus on that today. And for those of you who are not part of that intensive, or these teachings are new for you, well, you have a special treat today, because they're quite profound. Actually, this is the part we're in. So let me just read a little bit. So these, let me just say background, the teachings on these mind trainings come from India, in the culmination of Indian Buddhism in the 10th, 11th century, and were brought to Tibet by a great Indian master named Atisha. And one of the things he brought with him was this lineage and teachings of the mind trainings that were in seven verses. Now, what happened within a few generations was that a Tibetan, we know that a teacher brought this very fundamental teaching on the seven verses, but then this actual text of what's called mind trainings has kind of 58 subdivisions, little slogans. And so we believe that, I'm not a scholar, but what they say is that this Tibetan master, I believe his name was Chekawa or something like that, when he received these oral teachings from his teacher, who goes back to Atisha, he wrote them down. Now, whether he wrote them down word for word or whether this was interpretation, but we know they're quite wonderful. And these teachings deal with what's called in Mahayana Buddhism bodhicitta, Sanskrit word bodhicitta, which has multiple meanings. But fundamentally, it's about the awakened mind. Bodhi is awakening, citta is mind. But it also refers to the person who is cultivating that awakened mind. And traditionally, the practices of awakening the enlightened mind has sort of two aspects. In Buddhism, everything sort of has at least two aspects, the relative and the absolute. The relative is about love and compassion. Okay. So that is the in the relative world, which is our world, right, the world that we see, the world as it appears, the fundamental teaching is to function in a way that one is always manifesting love and compassion to all beings, to all life. That's kind of the fundamental support of a mind. It says here below, this arousal of wanting to awaken to one's true mind. He says, it arises on the basis of love and compassion. Even when full Buddhahood is attained, There is nothing to do except to work for the welfare of others with non-referential compassion. Now, so ultimately, this is what this path is about. It's about coming to awakening, which is just a highfalutin word of saying, really coming to know who and what you fundamentally are. Not what you think you are, not what you've been taught you are, you know, not what you heard you are, not what you feel you are, but who you and what you actually are. And you discover that through the practice of meditation, by coming home, returning to your natural, unconditioned mind. Now, the realization and the understanding of your unconditioned mind is called absolute bodhicitta. Okay? It's not what's generally seen as how things appear. It's something you can only realize through this kind of what's called deep looking or vipassana. Okay? Because it's not apparent to us, this absolute, this unconditioned nature of reality in our mind. It doesn't mean it can't be understood intellectually and conceptually, but it's much better to understand it experientially. Now, and again, what I'm reading from is a, I should explain. So there are these basic seven verses and the 58 or 57 slogans that are part of them. But then there are many, many, many commentaries going back 1,000 years on this text. Okay, and there are even modern commentaries. And like in our intensive now, we are reading the people in it are reading several of the commentaries. Some of them are very traditional and some of them are modern. They're modern American teachers who are commenting on them. So this is a commentary by a Tibetan teacher named Zhang Myung Kontrol, who actually lived in the 19th century. So he's not that long ago. And so I should have explained I was reading his commentary. Now, in terms of the 7 points, the first point is first, and these are very simple, first train in the preliminaries. And again, I won't go into that today because we've had many other teachings on the preliminaries as well as people in the intensive. But just to know that even though today I'm going to be sharing with you some of the slogans that deal with what's called absolute bodhicitta, the unconditioned enlightened mind, the first slogan is, begin training in the preliminaries. So this is very important, and I'll just say it again for those who aren't familiar with it, and even those of you who are very familiar with it. To really transform and heal and transform your mind, and to be able to really manifest your life, which means the actions of your body, speech, and mind in an awakened and enlightened way, takes a lot of construction. And if you think about it as a building with many stories, practices being many stories, it all relies on one thing, a strong foundation. If you don't have a strong foundation, your building will not go up well. It may go up for a few floors, but at some point, it's going to begin to sway. At some point, there are going to be cracks in the wall. Okay. What does this mean? It means that if you really have a profound aspiration or a deep aspiration in terms of your own transformation, you have to build that on a solid foundation. And many people may find they've been at spiritual life, meditative life for years, if not decades, and somehow things don't fundamentally change. Even though they may be sincere practitioners, right? Even though they've read all the texts, they've been on retreats, they've done all the, why is it that still, you know, the cracks keep appearing? Even though people go, I know better. Why is it? Well, because we don't have a firm foundation. And in the text, it really sets forth what these foundations are. We have to fundamentally change our view of life and reality, so we can see, at least conceptually, clearly, understand clearly what's going on in this world, kind of clean up all our misperceptions and begin to live a life that has some clarity because it understands what's going on in this world, right? And these are teachings that have to do with the fundamentals of the Buddha's teaching, which is around impermanence, around dukkha, suffering, around cause and conditions, understanding karma, and understanding the precious opportunity that we all have to be born a human being and the opportunities we have to encounter a spiritual path. So when one really understands this, not just intellectually, but really gets it, you know, 80% of your afflictions are going to just disappear. Because most of our afflictions are because we can't accept reality as it is. So we're endlessly grasping at things that are ungraspable. We're endlessly looking for happiness in things that fundamentally don't give us happiness. We're endlessly pushing away things because we think they're getting in the way and we don't want them. And so we're very busy. Why are we so busy? Because we don't understand. We don't have correct view. Okay? When you have correct view, then life is a lot easier, even if you don't even cross your legs to meditate. So this is important. I mean, because Americans, you know, we're very much, you know, we think intellectually we understand everything, and so now we think, oh, bring a little mindfulness, a little meditation in my life, only can make it better. Right? Doesn't say it doesn't have a therapeutic value, but it's rather transformative. And that's often because we still have our wrong thinking, our wrong views about life and reality. And when we clean that up and begin to see clearly, there's a lot more stability and clarity that now we can build a form of, you know, a real spiritual life for ourselves. Now, the other big thing in the preliminaries is to generate this capacity for love and compassion. To come out of our egocentricity and our self-centeredness and begin to relate to the world and the people in the world, including ourselves, in a kind and loving and compassionate, caring way. So that's another game changer. Because most of our relationships with the world is all about getting my needs, my wants, my desires met. Protecting myself, keeping myself safe, you know what I mean? It's very self-absorbed. In Buddhism we say that is the source of our suffering, just that self-absorption. It's hard for us to believe that somehow developing an altruistic intention and view in life is actually a much happier way to live than a life which is always self-absorbed. Again, we live in a culture that only that only reinforces that self-absorption is the way. So that is why this Dharma is so precious and so needed today, because it provides another way of seeing life and living life than what's often presented to us. So the preliminaries are they're to be meditated on, to be reflected on, and they're also preliminaries in terms of how we establish ourselves in our meditation practice. And after that, it really begins by learning how to establish ourselves in the practices sort of we did today, what's called these practices of samatha, calm abiding, sometimes using the breath to stabilize the mind. Okay. So now, having done all that, and I realize that many of you sitting here today may go, you know, I'm still back in kindergarten. So just listen today. No, but some of you may be ready to hear these things. Now, the interesting thing about these teachings in these seven verses is while the first verses train in the preliminaries, the foundations, the second verse, rather than kind of building up sequentially through what's called relative bodhicitta step by step, jumps to what's called absolute bodhicitta, the highest view. Now, that may be sort of counterintuitive, right? But it's because having the ultimate view, which is the view of the empty nature of reality, then makes all your work in relative world much easier. Right? If you think everything is really solid and permanent, right? Me, you, the things of the world, my mind, my thoughts, my feelings, my perceptions, my ego. If you live in a world where everything is, again, solid and reified and separate, then our attempts to live a life of compassion, to live a life of loving kindness, to live a life of openness, to live a life of connection is difficult. It's a struggle. Because even though we like these practices and teachings, right? You know, wow. Sure, who wouldn't want to be a more loving and compassionate person, right? I mean, you could probably, most people would agree to that. But yet the actual practice of it, even when you're well-intentioned, is very challenging, if not difficult. Because we still are so attached to this view of the world and our thoughts and our feelings and our mind as solid, permanent, self-existing things, because that's the way it appears. So, before getting into all these wonderful slogans that really help us live a compassionate and loving and kind life in the world as it is, which is what this text is primarily about, when it gets to the section of actually training in bodhicitta, it says, begin with the absolute. In the first slogan, after you have done the preliminaries and stabilized yourself as we talked, the first slogan is simply, regard all phenomena as dreams. Very simple. So this is taking lots of teachings, lots of philosophy, psychology, and putting it into 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 words. Regard all phenomena as dreams. So now we're really getting into sort of Buddhist psychology or how a Buddhist sees the world. So what is phenomena? Everything is phenomena, right? So phenomena are the things we see, the objects we see. So right now I see you. You're my phenomena. That's the phenomena. You're looking this way, that's your visual phenomena, right? That's phenomena. When we hear, you know, sound phenomena. That's a phenomena. Something appears, a sight, a sound, a smell, a taste, a touch. So there's the five senses that all are, you know, perceiving phenomena, things. Let's call it things. Okay? As well as our mind, in this case our conceptual, our kind of conceiving mind, has objects too. And I asked you to observe the objects of your mind. And what did you see? Thoughts, feelings, perceptions. So you put all this together, and what do you got? Our experience. We're always experiencing phenomena. Is that clear? I mean, is there any question? Let's work through this today. So our whole experience of the world is that we are endlessly processing phenomena. The phenomena, I mean, where is the data? The data is coming to us through our five senses and through our thinking, perceiving, remembering mind, our conscious mind. You put those together and you get what? Us. How we think we are. That's our world, right? We exist in the world of phenomena. Now, the commentary of Khandro Rinpoche, Jamyang Kangchul is, he says, so, I mean, is that clear? That's phenomena. And the slogan is telling us, regard all phenomena as dream or dreams, or I like to say often dreamlike, because people can go a little extreme if they think it's like a dream only. Is that clear? So, fundamental human experience, we're always experiencing phenomena. That's what we base our whole life. That's the data. And he's saying, relate to it as if it's all dreamlike, which is the opposite of what we do. Is that not true? We relate to phenomena as if it's real, solid, important, significant. So we enter the world of phenomena with this sense of, again, solidity. We think our thoughts are real. We think our feelings are real. We think our memories are real, right? We think all the things we see are real things. Why do we do that? Because they appear that way, don't they? It's not like we're crazy. They appear that way, don't they? I mean, is that right? See, I appear in this moment to you as real. You'd say, what's he talking about? This isn't a dream. I mean, this is real, right? Is that true? This is real. What is this craziness? This Dharma stuff. Regard all, so we need to understand this. So he says, this is his commentary on this phrase. He says, actual phenomena, that is the world and its inhabitants, are objects that we grasp at with our senses. Okay, so all these things are appearing to our five senses, our six senses, and we grasp at them. We move toward them and we hold them. Right? Is everybody with me? That's what we do. These appearances are simply our mind's manifestations of confusion. What does that mean? Right? See, because you go, well, I'm not confused. I see this up. I see that. Right? There's no confusion there, is there? See, what the confusion is, you don't really see the true nature of this experience. You're only caught up on how things appear and not how things really are. Because then he goes on to say, in the end, they're not actually existent in any way whatsoever, but like the appearances in a dream. Now, this is important. This is why they use the word dream. Okay? Anybody dream last night? Or at least remember dreaming at some point in the past. All right. Now, remember when you were in the dream, how did it seem to you? Real. Right? Remember that. When you were in the dream, it appeared real. Why did it appear real? Because you saw things, you heard things, you smelled things, right? You felt things. And you also felt that you were having the experience, weren't you? Is that clear? And yet, when you awaken, what do you realize about that very real experience that you just had? Was it real in any inherent way? No. And yet, when it was happening, did it seem real? And yet, when we awake, we realize, wow. You know, and again, if it was a really wonderful dream, you're a little disappointed that you woke up, that it's not real, right? And if you had a really bad dream, you're quite happy that it wasn't real. But either way, you know whatever happened it didn't have any inherent reality to it. In truth, it was only a creation of what? Our minds. And yet, when we're dreaming, we think it's real, don't we? Is that clear? Now, right now, look at me again. I'm not narcissistic. I mean, this is just to prove a point. Do I look real? Does this experience feel real? But remember 5 minutes ago when I asked you to look at me, you thought that was real. Now, what happened to that experience that you had 5 minutes ago? Where is it? Where is it? Gone. All the experiences of your life, the good ones, the bad ones, your wonderful childhood, your terrible childhood, your good life, your terrible life, your successes, your failures, your ups, your downs, your likes. I mean, where is that all right now? Where is it? Can anybody see where it is? Just look. Really? You look in your body and you see it stored? Look in your body right now. Do you see any storage facility? Really? Look. Do you see memories when you look in your mind? Are memories real? And how real is anything else? What? Yes, there is a good answer. Your memories, aren't they just like dreams? They're just mental. I mean, they're not real. I mean, if you have a memory of something you did when you were 10 years old, what is your name? Josh. Well, if you have a memory, have a memory of something from your childhood. Okay, just generate a memory. Are you there? Okay. Can you show me the memory? You could draw it, but is that still the experience you had when you were 10? Is that the real experience, Josh? I mean, is it real right now? Is it really happening right now, that experience? And what's the truth about the past? It's gone. It doesn't exist. You have a memory. It's like looking at a photograph. If you see a photograph of yourself at 10 years old, is that the way you are now? No. Are memories any different than dreams? They're just made of mind. Do you remember a dream? No. How real is that memory? You remember it. But if you look right at that memory, that thing you're calling your memory, it's not a real experience anymore. You have an image, you have an impression, that's all you have. Like a dream. It's not here now, is it? It's in the past. And where is all the past? I mean, turn around. Do you see it behind you? I mean, so this is deep stuff, Josh. You're sort of in Buddhism. You're sort of in the deep end of the pool now. And I realize for some of you, so just go with it, okay? You don't have to accept it or believe it. This is not like that, okay? This is meditative experience. This is something that you can experience for yourself. So, but he's saying, again, remember a few minutes ago I said, remember the experience when you looked? Where is that now? Where is it? It's dreamlike, this reality. Yes, ma'am. Yes. Yes, I like that. So say that again, and I will repeat it for thee. How come when we are awake, we can remember when we are awake, we know that we were actually only dreaming. We're in the dream. Do we not know that? Yes. So, that's very good. What's your name? Triana, I give you an A for that one. So Triana asks a very good question. She says, hey, why is it when we're awake, we can know that we were dreaming? But how come when we're dreaming, we have no idea that there is a state called being awake? Right? That's fundamental Buddhism. You know why? I'll give you just a simple answer, then you can practice and study for the rest of your life. Because in Buddhism, that's called ignorance. It's called, we do not know how things really are. Right? So, if you think about your fundamental reality is the dream, right? When you awaken, when you wake up, you become enlightened to the reality that your dream was not real. It was just a dream. Even though it appeared real when you were having it, you know now it was just made up of what? Yeah, the mind was just fabricating an experience, wasn't it? I mean, you saw things in your dreams with your eyes open. Your physical eye, the eye that's... No. You might have smelled things, you might have heard things, you might have felt things. You might have had a self in the dream. Right? So you had a total experience that was not real. In this way, that this is real, when you're awakened. Now, what Buddhism is about is how do we... just answers your question. How do we awake in this dream? How do we be awakened in this dream so we know what's real or not? Which would be analogous to going, hey, wouldn't it be nifty if in a dream I knew I was dreaming? How would that be? How would it be to be awake in a dream? And you know it's a dream. And you know that you have control over what's going on. Right? What do you think? But wouldn't that be kind of nifty? To be awake in the dream? To know you were dreaming? See, if you knew you were dreaming in the dream, then if you were having a bad dream, would you be scared? Yeah, or you could, even if it's going on, you could even enjoy it. Like watching a... do you ever watch, horror movies or anything? Do you like them? Sort of, yeah. But you know they're just movies, right? So you can just watch a horror movie, even though it's a horrible thing, what's going on. Yet, I mean, a lot of people enjoy it. Why? Because they know it's not real, even though it appears real, right? Movies appear real, don't they? We have a real experience, don't we? You ever watch a movie? You see, you hear, you do, you have all kinds of emotions and feelings, right? If I said, what's your name again? Triana? Yeah, Triana, if I said to you, is the movie real? Are those people in it real? They're just what? They're just characters, even they're not real. So I'm having a totally unreal experience. The movie's not real, the characters that are having the drama aren't real, and yet you're feeling what? All kinds of stuff. Again, this is big stuff, but it's worth contemplating. Like Josh is still maybe over there going, well, what is this about? Aren't memories real? Aren't thoughts real? Aren't dreams real? Isn't this real? Right? And I certainly grant, in the moment, they appear real. But like Triana very wisely said, just because in the moment something appears real doesn't mean it's intrinsically real. Because what do we know about a dream? What is the nature of a dream? Is it a solid, permanent thing? No. What do we know now about, like if I said to you, does this experience you're having right now seem real? And you would say what? Yes. But is it intrinsically real and going to be always here? Say it's a solid, stable thing, this moment? And you would say what? No. And as Trion again wisely pointed out, to know that is very liberating. Because what happens when you don't know it? What happens when you don't know that whatever your experience doesn't have any intrinsic solidity or reality to it? We do what? What do? We do two things. To those things that we want, right, that we feel are good, we what? We attach, we grab on, we grasp, blah, 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 right? To those things we don't, you know, we don't want part of the dream, we do what? We push it away. So our whole life is about what? Grasping, pulling it in, desiring, wanting, grasping, holding on, feeling it slip away, panicking, getting angry, irritated, sad, hurt, right? I mean, right? Right. Or we're just pushing. Does that describe the basic human life? Yeah, that's what we're up to. Why? Because we're ignorant. Ignorant of what? The fundamental truth that all experience is dreamlike. Such as this moment is dreamlike. Remember when millions of years ago we had about a couple hours of meditation? Do you remember? Anybody remember that? Josh, you remember that? Yeah. Josh has a memory of that. Where is that meditation that we did? Where is it? It appeared real at the time. I mean, some people really thought, gee, I'm doing pretty good today. I'm doing a good meditation. Some people went, oh, I'm never going to get this. This is terrible. Right? You know what I mean? Some people are positive, some people are negative. But where is that all now? Where is it all? The experience, your emotional reaction to it, where is it all? Gone. Why is it gone? Because you had some kind of magic potion? You had some fairy dust that made everything go away? Why is it gone? Why is it gone? See, this is very interesting. Why is it gone? Because it was never real to begin with. Okay. So the challenge is what? To begin to train yourself as you go through your day to have this sense of the dreamlike nature of your experience. He's not suggesting you stay in bed all day. Okay, or it's not suggesting, well, if it's all just a dream, I might as well, what, go to the beach. Okay, in Buddhism, we call that nihilism, going to an extreme. It's like, oh, it's all a dream, all phenomena is dreamlike, nothing has any meaning or consequence. I just won't go to work today, I'll just go to the beach. I won't pay my rent this week. It's all a dream, right? When the bank, you know, sends a nasty letter for their mortgage payment, I'll say, don't they understand? This is all a dream. Okay, so you don't want to go too far. I mean, we've already been too far. We think it's all real and solid and very serious and important. The other extreme is there. You want to find that where you can be in the world, having your experiences, but see all experience as dreamlike. Is that clear? It's a way of being in the world, but knowing, it's sort of like we were just saying, Trayana, that it's like doing what she'd love to be able to do, to be in the dream, but to know it's just a dream. means you're kind of awake. So you can be in this experience, but now that we've gone over it a couple of times, is this experience we're having in this moment real, solid, and permanent?
No.
And yet we're here. But we don't have to grasp it. Well, impermanence is part of the quality of this moment. Yeah, it's all part of the same. But it's the issue is real. See, in Buddhism, real has very significant meaning. Because when we say something is real, we mean it's what? This is real. Right? Which means it's solid, permanent, this is real. But the truth is, as soon as I say this is real, it's gone. Right? I mean, if I said to you, every word that I've spoken so far today, and unfortunately I'm speaking lots of words, where are all those words? Anybody know? Where's every word that I spoke? What? Right, it's like Josh said. It's like a memory. Right, so now we have tape recorders or everything, so we can kind of concretize. But that's not the real thing. It's not this. That's just an impression of this. This is real. And as soon as I say this is real, it's gone. Yes. That's a good question, you see. The question is, what's real? Well, there are many ways of looking at that. So the first thing we want to go is to see all the things that we name as real and to really realize they're not any real in a solid. You know, like right now, this flower looks what? What's your name?
My name is Erica.
Erica. So Erica, this looks real, doesn't it? Right? It really looks like it's a real flower, isn't it? Okay. Now, if I took it apart and took off all its petals, all its blossoms, and just cut it into tiny little pieces, what happened to that flower? Is it still a flower? Right. But if you came up to it, would you go, oh, look at the beautiful, look, see, this is real to you, right? But if it was scattered around on the floor, would you come up and say, wow, look at that beautiful flower? No. So this appears to be something called a flower, which exists right in this moment. That's all we can say about it. But it's not really a flower because it just, as you said, it's just made up of parts. Right? And all those parts are impermanent. That's true too. Like, look at this. Does this look real? Yes. And does this look like Fred? Yes. But the truth is, this is not a real permanent thing, is it? I mean, this thing's in the process of what? Decomposing. Is everybody aware of that when they look at this? That this is not going to be here forever. This might not even, you know, I could have a heart attack right now. Gone. Is that not true? So we think it's real, but we don't see deeply into how things really are, such as they are impermanent, such as they have no solid, there's no solid permanent thing called a flower here. Even though in the moment we would say, oh yeah, that's really a flower. It certainly appears that way, like a dream. Dreams appear real. And yet we know they're not, are they, in any intrinsic way. So actually, in Buddhism, what is reality is one of those deep questions we meditate on. Because you're right, you go, hold on. This is getting a little scary, right, Erica? It's like, let me get this straight. Nothing's intrinsically real. Everything is, right, impermanent and dreamlike. Eric is getting a little worried over there, right?
I like that. It goes, you get nappy. Well, that's the other way to go, right? But can you see, we go, uh-oh, come on, hold on. There's got to be something real, which means what? There's got to be something I can hold on to, right? There's got to be something permanent or solid that I can grasp onto, right? I don't want to drown. Anyway, that's another whole issue. Those are interesting thoughts. Okay, thank you. So thinking along these lines, so this is when you're practicing this slogan, you are beginning to reflect in the way we've been doing, but more importantly, as you go through your day, you're beginning just to notice the dreamlike nature of your life. Right? How things just appear real in the moment and then they're gone. It's like a dream. Okay? So that's what you're noticing. Anybody ever like really get stuck in a drama in their life? I mean, you know, there was a lot of anguish, anger, fear, hurt, sadness. Anybody ever know anything like that? Right. At the time, did it not seem real? It seemed like what? The realest thing in the real world. And yet if I said to you, if it was so real, where is it now, that drama? Where is it? If it was real, it has to exist. Where is it? Where is it? That drama, that pain, that anger, that hurt, that sadness, that fear, that seemed at the time so real. Where is it? Gone. And all the people in it have moved on. We might still see everybody as very solid and real in our memory, as Josh said. But they've all moved on too. Some of them may be dead. And yet we can still what? Still milk it for its suffering. Is that not true? We have the mind that is ignorant has incredible capacity for what? For creating suffering. Out of what? Out of its ignorance of how things are. Right? So you could have a terrible dream last night. Your whole family died in a car crash. Right? You know what I mean? Really a bad one, right? You could have been in the dream, devastated. Right? And yet when you wake up, what do you realize? It's all a dream. And yet at the time it seemed what? So real. Remember that drama I was just asking you about? At the time it seemed what? So real. And now what? You haven't even thought about it. I mean, forgive me for asking you to think about it, right? Because you haven't thought about it in years or decades. Why not? Because it's gone. Everything is just like that. Everything we've done today, gone. Is that not true? Everything you might imagine is going to happen the rest of the day doesn't exist either. What seems real? This moment seems real, right? And yet, as we just spent the last hour, it's not real. Right, Erica? I'm just looking for confirmation. Is that true? There you go. Thank you. See, young people can get this much easier than older people. What? If you get it starting early, you're ahead of the game. That's certainly true. You got less invested. Younger people have less invested in reality. The older you get, the more invested you are in everything being real. And the more invested you are in your historical drama. Your historical story. Now, and then this is all we'll get to today. I think this is enough. Once again, I spilled my tea. What? No, hold on. I think I have a tissue in here. Thank you. Thank you, Brian. You see? All that just happened, right? Poured the tea, spilled the tea, noticed I spilled the tea, realized it's not good for the bench to have tea on it. Brian jumped up to help. I put my hand in there, remember that tissue, pulled it out, wiped it off, sitting here talking to you, telling you the story. It's all gone, isn't it? Where is that tea that spilled? Where's that whole experience? Where is it? Josh would say what? I have a memory of it, right? You could manufacture a memory, but you would say it's really not real, is it? Yeah. Well, you just, don't take my word on it. It's important. Buddhism is very practical and open to challenging. You just check it out for yourself. Now, this next one is very significant. Now, I don't know if our younger people have figured this one out yet. But if you've begun to notice that all phenomena is dreamlike, right, as maybe you're beginning to accept, there's an obvious next question. Can the young people guess what could that next question be? It's sort of like if I'm aware that everything is dreamlike, right? Can you get that one right? Now, the next obvious question would be what? What is it that's aware? Hold on, right? Can you see? That would be the next thing I'd want to look at. Okay, I get it. All phenomena is dreamlike. But what is it that's aware of that? Is that a solid, real thing? You see, I mean, wouldn't that be the kind of a thing you could be very, you know, you might feel cheeky just kind of getting this dreamlike thing, right? This could be enough, right? I mean, this could be disorienting enough to begin to kind of see life in a different way. And actually, I mean, I'm just going through the teachings today, but in reality, these are things that you practice over months and years to really get it. So, once one's really clear about the dreamlike nature of phenomena, then the next obvious logical thing, well, how about this, right? How about this that's aware of all that? I just came to that conclusion. Is that a real solid thing? One would hope so, wouldn't one? I mean, as Erica just said, I mean, there's got to be something solid and real here, right? I mean, or it's really a very strange world. So, the next slogan is, see, these ancients were very wonderful, very brilliant. They just kind of followed the evidence logically. All right. I can conceptually understand the kind of empty nature of all phenomena. Nothing's permanent, nothing's solid. We could even, take everything apart, right? Everything seems solid. Brian seems solid, the bell seems solid, the tea seems solid. But we know science can show that it's really not, is it? It just appears that way. And everything this cup didn't just come out of nowhere. This cup was dependent on all kinds of materials and fabricators and factories and people. I mean, there were many causes and conditions that actually brought this thing we call the cup into being. It didn't just spring. Cup. No. In Buddhism, we call that dependent origination. Everything's dependent on everything else. So that's another way to show that nothing has any solidity in the phenomenal world. Okay, so this is big. But then he says, should you wonder if mine in itself is real? Right? Good question. The next slogan says,
examine the nature of unborn awareness. Okay? So he's saying, okay, but he's turning it into a meditative practice. These are meditative practices. All right. So examine means what? Investigate. Okay? Investigate the nature of that which is aware. Like right now, everybody, again, I'm not a narcissist, but everybody is aware of me. Seeing me, hearing me, you're aware, right? I mean, is that how you know me? Right? Because you're aware. I mean, try to take away your awareness. I mean, it's impossible. But just for, you know, for those of you who have good imaginations and seen a lot of science fiction. Okay? Imagine not being aware. You can't do that, right? But even if you imagine it, you're aware of you're imagining it. Right? So, awareness is this fundamental thing that supports all our experience, right? Hearing, smelling, tasting, feeling, sensing, thinking. All that's arising in awareness. Okay? So, what is the nature, examine, not even what, he says examine the nature of unborn awareness. And then his commentary, Jamin Kamcho's commentary is, when you look directly at the presence of mind, no color, no shape, no form is perceived. Now he's giving us sort of the answer, but actually in practice, we are actually doing it ourselves. We're looking into our minds and to examine it. What is it? Now again, some people will go, well, it's just the brain, you know, doing its whatever it does. No. That's a concept. That's an idea. We're not talking about concepts and ideas here. We're talking about you, each of us, since we all are aware, we're examining our own awareness directly. Is that clear? We're not thinking. You know, now if you want to examine the nature of thought, please do that, but do it directly. Examine the nature of your own thoughts. I mean, how do you know you have a brain? I mean, can anybody look into their mind right now and see a brain? Does anybody see a brain? What? Does anybody see a brain? You can see a brain. You can't even see it. Well, see, that's another whole very interesting thing. See, we think we have a head, but we can't even see. But we won't go there, okay? Yeah, the only way you know you have a head, you have to what? Right? Feel it. You've got to touch it. It's real. Oh, good. You know, you could like, you might have panicked there for a moment, Rick, right? I can't feel my head. Or quickly you run to the bathroom and look in the mirror. Right? Sort of a physical confirmation. Right? That you have a head. Right? But if you look into your own awareness, do you see a brain? No. It's something we've been told. I'm not saying whether it's physically not true or not. That doesn't matter. Please understand, these are meditative practices. That's why anybody can do them. You don't have to be a scientist. You don't have to know anything about the brain or brain chemistry or photoelectrons or quantum physics or all these things that people love to get into. This is direct experience. So we're looking into the nature of that which is aware. And you're looking, you're examining it. Does it have a color? Does it have a shape? Does it have a form? Where did this awareness come from? Does it have a beginning? Does it have an end? Can you locate it? So when you're doing this next slogan, examine the nature of unborn awareness. Now again, this is a deep practice in Buddhism. Okay. I'm not expecting you to come to full realization. But you can even play around with it a little bit to see. He says, by examining, investigating mind, you should come to a precise and certain understanding of the nature of this awareness, which has no origin, location, or cessation. So, we all, everybody grant that we are aware, that there's awareness here, right? And that when you made the previous statement about all phenomena is dreamlike, you came to that conclusion because you are aware of that fact, so to speak. Is that true? So, this thing that's aware, you know, what is that? You see, that's what it's saying. Well, what is that? Is that a solid, permanent thing? Or is my idea that I have something called an awareness is also just a dream? Okay? So this is getting into the deep end of the pool. Some of you have just might have come here today to, you know, be in the kiddie pool a little bit. Okay, so I understand where we may be, but this is what's happening. And I think it could be beneficial. But the important thing is what? It's all a dream anyhow. So, you know, this whole day and everything we do in it will also be gone. And whether you want to remember it and work with it is really your choice. But otherwise, you let it go and it just could be like any, you know, could have been like you went to the mall today. Just another dream within a dream. Okay, so just close your eyes a minute. Okay, it's easier for some when you close your eyes. And again, right now, if you can hear, you are hearing these sounds, right? You're hearing that. You're aware of these sounds. You may be aware of sensations in your body. Okay? You may be aware of thoughts arising and passing in your mind. So this is all unfolding in your awareness. So kind of get it set up first, like, become aware that you're aware of all these things. You're aware of, you know, that all phenomena is dreamlike, or you're aware of memories, or you can be aware of anything. This awareness, you know, is very malleable, we might say. And now you turn to look directly into that which is aware. Wherever you think that awareness is, wherever you think that which is hearing, smelling, tasting, feeling, thinking, remembering, perceiving, all those functions of your awareness. But when you look directly into the awareness itself, you examine it. What is this awareness? Is it a thing? Does it have, the thing is defined by having characteristics. Does it have a shape? Does it have walls and sides? Does it have a top and a bottom? Does it have a color? What is the nature of this which is aware? Examine the nature of your own unborn awareness. Examine means you've got to do a little work here. You're examining your own awareness. There's something that is aware right now and is hearing this voice, this sound. What is the nature of that? Is it a thing? Is awareness a thing? Some of us may think, well, you know, I'm the one who's hearing this. I hear this. Me. Okay? Look right into where you think that I, me, is. Right now, what is the nature of that? Do you see something there? Solid? It has a form, a color, a shape? What is the nature of our unborn awareness? take a few moments. Examine the nature of your own, whatever it is you're aware of. You sort of turning away from the object, whatever it was that you were aware of, and looking into that which is aware. What is that? With the question, like, what is this? Is it a thing? We name it like it's a thing. It's awareness. It's my awareness. But when you look, when you examine the my that claims the awareness or the awareness itself, what do you find? What is the nature of this which is aware? However you define it. You know, looking into the nature of your own experience, really. What is it? What is it that experiences all this thing? But you're examining it by looking right at it. You're not thinking, which is hard for some of us. Your own experience, what is your experience? You wake up in the morning and you may go, oh, I'm awake. See, what is it that knows you're awake? What is that? Aware. When you look for it, what do you find? Again, we think there must be something, something real called awareness, something real called me. But when you look right into it itself, what do you see? Examine it for yourself. So this is very empowering. No one's trying to feed you anything. Please understand, these instructions are saying, examine the nature of your own unborn awareness. And just be very open in examining. Don't. A good researcher doesn't have preconceived notions of what they're supposed to find. A good researcher just follows the trail. So you're following the trail back. So you can examine the nature of your own awareness, your own mind. Whatever you think it is, this is not thinking, this is examining. Some of you may go, gee, I'm just getting confused. Well, what is it that's aware that you're confused? What is that that's aware of it? See, it's always the same question. What is this awareness? What is this self? Whatever you want to call it. What is this mind? What is it? In this, we're all equal. Whether we only have a high school GED, or we dropped out in eighth grade, or whether we're postdoc. This is not about any of that. This is a different kind of intelligence. This is a different kind of wisdom. What is the nature of my own experience? Who am I? These are all, it's all about that. So please open your eyes a second and questions. Yes.
Well, that was really interesting, and because all kinds of things came up for me. One was, what's initially I thought, well, maybe the source of awareness is the mind, but then I thought, no, I think awareness goes beyond that. But then I started to question my awareness and to see if what I think is an awareness, has that been tainted by my ego? Has that been tainted by my thinking?
Okay, so the problem is you're going the wrong way. You're going this way. Okay. People who've been with me over time, I'll just repeat that about the lion's gaze. Okay, it's very important, right? It's very central to this practice. Okay. You know a dog, when you throw a stick, what does a dog do? It chases it, right? Throw another stick, what does a dog do? It chases it. You throw sticks, balls, whatever you want to call it, all day, and what's that dog going to do? Chase it until it's what? Totally exhausted. And it just lays down. Right? That's a dog. Okay? Now, a lion, a lioness, right, sits there, right? Stick goes whizzing by, doesn't even move. Another stick goes whizzing by, doesn't even move. Third stick goes whizzing by. What does the lion do? Run after the stick? No. Lion turns its head. Who's throwing that stick? Right? If it doesn't like what it sees, it goes after the... Yeah. So the lion looks to the source. The dog never looks at the source. Is that clear? That's us. Thoughts, feelings, perceptions endlessly arising our whole lifetime. And what do? We chase after them, right? Until we're exhausted and we crawl into bed at night. And then we get up the next day, we're feeling a little refreshed. Right? And the sticks start whizzing by and we just chase them. Okay? So this is the problem. We want to be like lions. Lionesses. When that stick comes whizzing by, you turn and you look, where did it come from? That's what you want to see. You're looking in the other direction. All those thoughts you were just having about thoughts and this, where are all these thoughts coming from? And you would say what? The mind, okay. And I'd say to you, okay, look into your mind to see, examine what is the nature of mind. No, those are just more thoughts. Where did that thought come from? Right, where'd that one come from? I mean, at some point, you can keep chasing the sticks. Just close your eyes. Where do thoughts come from? Look into your mind, just look. Don't think, look. When you look, what do you see? Nothing. Do you have a mind? Look. Well, that's the best thing you said so far. That's good. Right? At least now you're an agnostic. Other questions? How'd you do with that? People find it hard, easy? What kind of... Yes, Antonella. Is that a question or is that a comment? So the question is, this awareness, is it universal or is it very specific to the individual? So I would say, Antonella, when you look, just close your eyes, when you look into your own awareness, keep your eyes closed, no peeking. When you look into your mind, your own awareness. Do you see something called individual awareness and something called universal awareness? Just look. Don't think. This is so simple. Just look into your own mind. Look into your own awareness. Are there two different awarenesses in there? Where'd that thought come from? Examine the nature of where'd that thought come from? And or how are you aware of that thought? This is going to the source, okay? It's hard for us. We're dogs. We spend our whole life just chasing after what, no matter what thought comes up, right? I mean, you could be having a nice day, and all of a sudden your mind will invent a problem. Right? You could be having a nice day and it'll sort of, let's think about that a while. Right? It's all being fabricated. When you look into your mind, that which is aware, that which is aware of me, of you, of your conversation, of your questions, when you look, when you turn and you look directly into that, what do you see? Just look. What do you see, Antonella? Take your time, close your eyes. Really close your eyes. What do you see when you look into your mind? Do you see something called Antonella in there? Well, you could fabricate anything. I'm not asking you to fabricate. I'm asking you to look, to be the lioness. Look, where are these thoughts coming from? What do you see when you look directly into your mind? What do you see, Antonella? Just look. But when you examine, even as far as you've examined, what do you see? Do you see something called a mind? 6x8? Bluish tinge? Is that what you see when you look into your mind? Do you look into your awareness? Do you see a thing? I don't know, the gentleman next to you, he's shaking his head. What do you see when you look into that which you call my mind, my awareness, my whatever? What do you see, Dragos? Nothing. No thing. It's important. It's not like, because there's this, because we know we're aware, right? So there's something going on here, right? But when you look to see, is it a thing? Does it exist like a thing? You'd have to say, what? No. This is the great mystery, right? It appears, and yet when you look deeply into it, you see there's nothing there. It's not a thing. But we have to see that. So, if I said Antonella, I mean, is that Antonella's body that I'm looking at? And you would say, what? Of course it is. What kind of crazy question of that? Of course that's Antonella's body, right? So you believe there's an Antonella who claims that body for herself, right? It's my body. It's Antonella's body. But if I say, look to wherever you think that Antonella dwells, what do you see when you look for Antonella? Can you find an Antonella inside your mind? Just look. What do you see? Do you see an Antonella? No. And yet we say, my body, as if there's some inherent thing outside the body that owns this body. I mean, we do talk this way, and we go to the doctors, you know. We have a relationship to this body. But my body, it's very interesting. Just examine it. Yes, somebody. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very dangerous. Yeah. So, yeah. Okay, so this is important. Now, this is deep stuff. Maybe you ought to join our community and we can go into this more deeply, okay? But, yeah, so the question is, she says, in her meditation, she can get it to a very deep place where there are no thoughts, just awareness, right? And if she's not careful, she can sort of carry that into her work. And when her boss is speaking to her, it's like, all right. So, yeah, so these are meditative instructions. There are a lot of other instructions that are coming about how to be in the world. Right. And you know, that's why it says dreamlike. Right? It's like, it's not as if you don't have to show up here today. Right? It's not as if you don't listen here. It's not as if you're not participating. Right? But you know that the experience is not a solid, permanent thing, right? And yet you're here experiencing it, right? So even though in the big picture, your work and your boss are dreamlike, not permanent or solid, in the moment, you better pay attention, right? Right? So if all of a sudden Brian yells, fire, or the fire alarm goes off, you don't want to be, oh. Right? You see what I'm saying? You know, I want you to get up, okay? So there's a middle place. But this is big stuff. Yes. Yes, ma'am. That's a thought. Yeah, that's a label.
It's like when you say,
when you look into your mind, when you look into that which you're saying is like this, I don't want to know what it's like. What's your experience? Is it a thing? When you look into your awareness, is it a thing? Does it have any shape, color, anything? Okay, so that's just a word, but we don't, at this point, we want to get beyond words. Remember the sticks? Energy is a word. Flower is a word. Thermos is a word. We want to get to the thing itself. When you look, it says examine. It doesn't say intellectually understand. Examine. Do you like fruit? What's your favorite fruit? Grapes. What does a grape taste like? What does that mean? Sugar sweet. What is the taste of a grape? There you go. Right? You can't really explain it, can you? But you know it, don't you? But you can't explain it. But you know it. It's like that. Okay? You want to know it. And yet there are no words for it, are there? I mean, can you tell me what it's like? I mean, how would you distinguish a... You know what I'm saying? I could go on. But I mean, it's like that. You see? Now, if you... Rather than, you know, writing an essay about the taste of a grape, which would only be words, and I could read it, but what's a simpler way to let Fred know what a grape tastes like? Yeah, give him one. It doesn't have to be words, does it? Oh, now I know what. That's what a grape. It's like that. But we have to give up our addiction to words. Not that they don't have a place, you know. But they're not the real thing. Okay? You know, so if you're confused, okay, that's good. You know, these are questions. We're beginning to look into the nature of reality. As I said to those of you who are coming for a nice relaxing day of mindfulness, This may not be what you bargained for, but as I said, we have this intensive going on, and I invited the intensive people to come today, so I'd give them more explanation about these teachings. So, but these are wonderful teachings, and everything that has been shared with you today is about you. And whether you are a member, non-member, a meditator, a non-member, a Buddhist, a non-Buddhist, it really doesn't matter. We all have the same mind. Right? Believers, non-believers, Christian, Jews, Muslims, Buddhists, all have the same mind, all has the same nature. That's where we are. That's where we're the same. So good, we'll stop here.